Hello, and welcome to episode 29 of Cavalytics. We are a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. And we are oh so very pleased to be doing a show after a Cavs win. Perhaps, like the Cavs, we'd all grown comfortable with the 10-game winning streak, and the losses in games 3 and 4 were tough for everyone on the Cavs side to handle. The last two podcasts have been sort of a depressing soup of pessimism and team flagellation, so it's nice to be recording after a win for a change. And this was no ordinary win. The Cavs blew the Raptors out from the start. They had the biggest lead ever had at halftime in a conference finals game at 31 points, and they coasted to the easy win. On this show, we're going to dig into the gory, whatever the opposite of gory is, the beautiful details of tonight's masterpiece of a game. We'll also handicap the rest of this series and the bizarro, shocking series going on in the Western Conference. Our podcast is hosted on SoundCloud and is available on iTunes or wherever you normally find your podcasts. If you can't find us, which is obviously the null set of people listening now, let us know and we'll fix it. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA. You can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. It's always a treat to hear from our listeners, and in my opinion, we should be getting far more fan mail than we do, so please reach out and let us know how awesome we are or how terrible. All feedback is helpful. I am Keith Carter, a lifelong Cavs fan with a graduate degree in computer engineering. That education probably pushed me toward a more analytics-based approach to sports commentary. Not to be outdone, my co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT who has far more legitimate numerology chops than I do, and I've finally gotten to him. How's it going, Arnav?
Good. Your intro is so long now.
Yeah, I had lots of time to write it in the fourth quarter. Yeah. There wasn't anything else to do, so I got to, you know, write a lengthy screed.
Was I the only one who was kind of peeved that they cut the lead from 40 to 38 at the end?
No, I was upset. it was funny. So it was 40, and then nobody scored for like two or three possessions, and then I don't remember who scored for Toronto, but I knew that the Cavs were just going to run the clock out, and I was bummed. 40 would have been a lot nicer.
So we have a new stat now. That is, Kevin Love is undefeated in playoff games in the United States.
Right, so he would be...
as long as he's in this country, we'll be good.
Ortini's 15-0, is that right?
Is that true? He was 10-14, yeah, 15-0, that's right.
Yep. Okay, well, as long as the Cavs can avoid not having home court advantage against a Canadian team, they should be good to go.
That is correct.
So tonight's game was great. Cavs, the final score was 116-78.
And that's probably closer than it actually was.
Yeah, the Cavs had a 100% win probability on unpredictable by about halfway through the second quarter. Yeah, it was just a complete blowout.
Yeah, it was. I think Kevin Love did a great job setting the tone early on in the first quarter. And then LeBron, as usual, was amazing. Kyrie made a bunch of his mid-rangers today, so he was good too. And then I thought just the defensive intensity was amazing just from the starting tip.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to know exactly how to break this game down, but I think Kevin Love is a good person to start on. So he started the game 5 of 5, and he had 19 points at halftime. What did you say his true shooting percentage was for the game?
96%. It's close to 100.
That's good,
actually,
right?
Close to the best LeBron has ever had in a 20-plus game. So that's really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, he was 8 of 10 from the field, including 3 of 4 from 3 and 6 of 6 from the line. Bizarrely, he had only 2 rebounds, but I think we can allow that given the...
That's fine. Yeah. I think Cavs like out-rebounded the crap out of them.
Yeah, they did. The Cavs
had 48 rebounds.
They out-rebounded them by 21, 48-27.
And shout out to Tristan Thompson. I mean, he was working hard. They got 5 offensive rebounds as a team. Tristan Thompson had 5 by himself.
Yeah. Yeah, Tristan had 9 points, 10 rebounds, 2 of 2 from the field, his normal sort of so-so from the line at 5 of 8. But even that was like I think that's a 75% true shooting percentage. He was plus 34.
The best thing about him today was that he was so much more careful when he got the rebound.
Yeah.
Because last game, I don't know if you remember, or even the game before that, he got stripped so many times when he had the rebound. Today, he held the ball tightly. He made sure no one was around and made a few moves and then passed it out instead of just, you know, handing them a free turnover.
Yeah, I mean, I am confused about what's going on with Bismack Biyombo, but Biyombo tonight had 7 points and 4 rebounds. I don't understand. I think you said, he plays like,
It's hard to get rebounds when the Cavs don't miss shots. So I think that you have to kind of get rebounding
Sure,
percentage. It's a
sure.
little different, yeah. And he had still had the highest on their team, so I don't think it was that. Or I guess Jason Thompson had more, but that was in garbage time.
Right. Yeah. You're looking at the same box score as I am. Yeah, he had 4 rebounds in 21 minutes, which isn't terrible, but considering he had, whatever, what was it?
26 and 14.
Yeah. So he had 40 rebounds in 2 games.
He plays so much better at home. I think
Yeah.
he feeds off of that crowd.
I mean, what? Okay, that's fine, but
It's a big swing too. It's not just like
the whole team is like that. I mean,
Yeah.
look at DeMar DeRozan, 2 of 8. Lowry was 5 of 12. It's
DeMar
stunning.
DeRozan just sucks. He just like once in a while he'll get hot and he'll, make those really, really tough shots. And when he gets trapped, he just doesn't know how to pass. So
Yeah.
that's pretty much his game, to be honest with you. Lowry is a good player. I've said it before on here too. I think he was. He foresaw. I'm pretty sure they foresaw the traps coming,
Yeah.
but Cavs just did a, such a good job on after the trap. So every time the Cavs would trap him, LeBron would be sort of roaming that area to cut off the passing lanes because
Yep.
they knew who they would pass to. It's so easy. He's going to pass to the closest person. And then Kevin Love specifically did a really good job. So when they trapped him, he would get very physical with him and try to get the ball out of his hand as soon as they trapped him. So that energy, I think, was just really good to see from the Cavs.
I mean, this whole thing is sort of confusing to me. The Cavs have looked so freaking good at home in this series.
Or just in
And,
general, right? So I think I told you
right.
before this game, Cavs had an 18.5 net rating at home. Obviously, it went up after this game.
Yeah.
And they were negative 0.4 on the road.
Yeah.
And their defense drops by 7 points per 100 possessions on the road. That is a huge swing.
Yeah, I mean, some of this is confusing because, the Cavs' only 2 losses in the playoffs have been on the road, so those stats are, well, the stats are what they are. Like, that's what's happened.
So,
But
but in every single, so I looked at that. In every single series, they've been better at home by like a big margin. It's not just this series because of the series that it's swinging. They've actually been like 7, 6 or 7 points better at home every single
Well,
series.
teams are typically 3 or 4 points better at home, and but
Exactly.
yeah, 6 or 7 is twice as much.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I mean, I was incredibly depressed the last 2 days. Like, my apologies to my friends and coworkers and girlfriend for the way I've acted. But and this is obviously like as encouraging of a game that a
As
game
you
can
can have.
possibly be. But I still don't know what to think about. Like, how do you handicap Game 6? Like, what do you think is going to happen? The Cavs, of course, have to play Game 6 in Toronto.
I think they'll win now. So I think that they have changed their strategy as well. So it's not just they're playing better in front of the crowd.
Right.
It's not like they made a ton of threes. I mean, they were 48% from three, don't get me wrong there. But they didn't take that many to begin with. I think their defense was just amazing today. And I do think they have to stick to this new identity where they do a lot of trapping. And a lot of aggressive, cutting off the passing lanes because it seems to get them going much better than the usual one-on-one defense. You hedge once in a while, you switch the other times. This just seems to get all of them involved in a lot, all of them sort of. And they also just increase their turnovers for the other team, and they scored so many points in transition. I mean, they had 18
Right.
turnovers, the Raptors
Right.
did.
Yeah, it seemed like every other possession the Cavs were getting a fast break land.
Right. So I think this is the brand of defense they have to play instead of the bland brand where they just sort of stand around and try to stop them one on one.
How much of the improvement tonight do you think was systemic? They've made changes to the way they're defending. For instance, to my eye, they also trapped a lot more tonight. And how much of it do you think is they
Just
got
playing
they
better.
yeah the, yeah they like sort of punched the Raptors in the jaw early, and the Raptors weren't able to get off the mat.
50-50. I think the systemic part is important. I think the systemic part led into them playing better, right?
Yeah.
So I think the trapping, as I mentioned, it just seemed as since they're so aggressive on those traps, and Kevin Love did a great job, as soon as I mentioned before, as soon as he would get the trap, he would get his hands active. So he wasn't able to pass out as much, and they generated a lot of turnovers. So what Kyle Lowry, how many turnovers did he have? He
Five.
had 5 turnovers, exactly. And I think a few of them were steals from Kevin Love. So one of them was a steal. He got a block as well. two blocks. And then DeMar DeRozan had another two turnovers. So
yeah, the traps were super effective.
And this is the brand of defense I think they have to continue playing. This is what the Heat did when LeBron was there. And I do think the Cavs sort of feed off of that energy. And also, it's good to have home court. And hopefully OKC pulls it out, so we'll have home court in the finals as well.
Right. Yeah, we should talk about the OKC Golden State series, but let's talk about this game a little bit more first. So did you read the piece by Zach Lowe that came out, I think, yesterday?
I did. I think I told you my thoughts, but
I was trying to set this up for the listeners. But yeah, so Zach Lowe is ESPN's probably, Kevin Pelton as well, but they both sort of, I would consider, are advanced analytics converts.
And I prefer Kevin Pelton, but yeah, either way, you can go.
Yeah, yeah. They both have access to SportsVU data, which is the company that has cameras above the court and gives XY coordinates of where shots are taken and
I think all of ESPN
player
knows.
Movements. Yeah. That data is non-public, so, I mean, Arnav and I have all kinds of analyses we'd love to do, but it's not public, so we can't. So we're sort of left with what Lowe and Pelton and some of the other sports reporters distill for us and produce. And Lowe wrote a piece talking about Kevin Love's, it was specifically, I thought, anti-Kevin Love. It mentioned Irving some, but it was more critical of Kevin Love and his issues on the pick and roll. And I have to be honest, I read it and I was bummed out and I immediately emailed you and you made me feel better. I think his analysis was a little bit sort of superficial. Do you want to explain what you explained to me?
Yeah, I just feel like a lot of these writers, and this is not just specific to Lowe, I think it's been the problem that I've had with these national writers is that they sometimes make some observations during some of the regular season games and they stick to that. And unfortunately, they don't get the opportunity to watch every single game, which obviously makes sense, right? They're not going to watch every single game for every single team.
Right.
And obviously, some of these guys are watching more Golden State games because Golden State was a much better team in the regular season than we were. So it just felt to me that he realized that, you know, in that Golden State game back in January where Kevin Love was just eaten alive on the pick and roll, I think he noticed that. And something that just stuck with him. And he found a few stats about it, did not report the sample size along with the stats. I thought he did a pretty poor job just with stats in general in the article. So he talks about the pick and roll duo, and he talks of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, and then he talks about how many points per possession they give up in the postseason, but then he compares that number to the regular season, which to me it just seems very disingenuous because, one, he does not mention the sample size in the postseason. So I looked at the synergy number specifically for Irving in pick and rolls, and it's like 80 possessions. So I'm pretty sure when you do the overlap of those two, it's got to be less.
Yeah, it's going to be a small fraction.
It's going to be like 50-something possessions or even less than that possibly.
Right.
And that's a tiny sample size to begin with. Secondly, he's comparing it to regular season numbers where defense just in general or offense just in general is not as good.
Right.
So I did another study where
play better teams in the playoffs. So
of course, yeah. So the average team is much better in the playoffs. Everyone agrees with that. Toronto, for all that we make fun of them, they're a top five offensive rating team in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And then the next study I did was I looked at LeBron's defensive synergy numbers, and they were all down across the board from the regular season to the postseason, which again, like, makes sense to the eye. Like, it's not like he's playing worse defense or anything.
Right.
It just happens that you're playing much better teams.
Right, he just has better opponents.
So I thought it was disingenuous because he compared it to the regular season numbers. I wish what he had done instead was A, mention the sample size, and B, compare it to past postseason teams that reached this far. Because if you compare it to, like, a first-round team, their sample size is tiny. So I just don't think he did a very good job with stats, which is why I prefer Kevin Pelton, honestly.
Yeah, I think his analysis is more rigorous usually.
Yeah, I think Lowe is good too. I think he has a very good eye and he spots these differences.
He does.
That
the way he puts clips together.
Exactly. I think that's nice great,
well.
But I just don't think his statistical.
Yeah, I think what happened here is he had an assumption and he looked at the data to confirm.
I thought he was waiting to put this article out and he just got it when, you know, the Cavs weren't playing well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he used it to confirm his bias. I would like to know what SportVU says about Irving with other picking roll partners. Because my suspicion is that the problem with the Cavs pick and roll defense is Kyrie Irving, not Kevin Love.
I completely agree. I think that's what I mentioned in the email to you too. Yeah. I want to see these numbers with Love and Dele, and I want to see these numbers with Irving and Thompson, just to see who the real culprit is.
Right.
And to my eye, I think it is Irving. So even I think a lot of people were talking on Twitter today that when Irving does a much better job of getting over screens, which he did tonight, the front court is just not as exposed. It's so much easier to cover for him when, you know, he's not like 10 feet behind the guy he's supposed to cover.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to know whether Irving was better or Lowry was worse or some combination of the two. I suspect it's some combination of the two, but my guess is that the weight is more on Lowry and that Irving has not suddenly become a stalwart defensive player. But who knows? Yeah, maybe Irving was better tonight.
Yeah, I think it was part of it was also we were trapping, which is easier for Irving to do than just, you know, getting over a single screen and then trying to catch up with the guy. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, Irving's very athletic, so he is pretty good at trapping, and he's strong too.
So I think, I don't know if you heard Windhorse or Windy's podcast.
I did not. What did he
yesterday?
Say? Yeah, what did
he say? Was talking about how when he watched these games, he noticed Irving putting a lot of effort in the first two rounds, and it's been significantly lower in this series.
Huh.
That's kind of what I saw with my eyes, too. I think his effort was just really poor at Toronto. And it wasn't just him, right? Game 3, everyone was bad defensively. I can't name a single guy I thought it was good defensively in Game 3.
Yeah.
Game 4, I thought everyone except for Irving, Smith, and Tristan were okay defensively.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, I agree. They just couldn't pull it out at the end. Huh, that's interesting. I did not hear that. I did not hear Windhorse say that.
He's on a bunch of podcasts. So I think he's on the True Who podcast sometimes. And
yeah,
then
he's a popular guest because he has a lot of access and a lot of knowledge.
You know, I like him. I know a lot of like the fan base despises him for some reason, but I like the guy. He's very good.
The reason why Cavs fans despise him is because he said LeBron was going to stay. And he got
did he?
Yeah. Well, if he committed to anything, that was his inclination. And he left Cleveland for Miami after.
But that's part of his job. I don't think he left intentionally.
Listen, I'm not. Don't shoot the messenger here. I agree. I think Windhorst is an outstanding NBA beat writer. I think that he never reports on speculation, and I just think he's generally a pro and a lot better than people like some of the like preeminent ones like Wojnarowski, who I think rumor mongers and basically makes deals.
Yeah, he
sucks.
I hate Wojnarowski.
Right.
Obviously, he has great sources, but I think his the way he sets up his opinion pieces just to pander to his sources is kind of disgusting to me.
Yeah, I think that's pretty deplorable. But in any case, all right. So Windhorse says he has not liked Irving's effort level. Presumably, he was mostly talking about games 3 and 4.
I think he was talking about the entire series, and I kind of agree with him. I think we blew out games 1 and 2 despite having a great defense. I think it was mostly them just leaving us. Like trying to cover us on the 3-point line and us just killing them in the paint.
Yeah.
In these blots, it's hard to sort of distinguish, you know, like how much what it is was the defense. Tonight, obviously, objectively, the defense was really good.
Right. Well, you get the sample size issues and stuff too. Like, I mean, look, the defense looked good tonight, but I mean, Toronto gave up halfway through the second quarter, so it's sort of hard to know how much that was the defense and how much that was Toronto just laying an egg.
Yeah, so I think the difference between games 1 and 2 in this game to me was that Cavs defense was great from the jump start. It wasn't just, you know, a run that happened in the second quarter.
Yeah, the Cavs were up. The Cavs were up 18 after the first quarter, and then they outscored them by another 13 in the second quarter.
Right. And the difference in games 1 and 2 was that they were actually kind of tied at the end of the first, and the run happened somewhere in the middle of the second when they let up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like the closest we've had to a wire-to-wire victory. I guess the Atlanta series we had some, but this is also up there.
Yeah. A couple other notes about tonight. So Jonas Valanciunas finally saw some playing time. He played 18 minutes. He was a minus 17, but that's one of the best on the Raptors. And he was 4-4 from the field.
Yeah, I thought he had some nice rolls to the basket where Cavs are trying to trap.
Yeah.
And Lowry made a nice pass. He found himself to some other situations where Cavs left him open at the free throw line for the baseline jumper.
Yep.
Which I'm not a big fan of, but it's okay.
Yeah. 0 rebounds and 2 turnovers for Valanciunas.
Yeah. Did you see that possession where he tried to post up Tristan and
I
just was
saw
not successful?
it.
I
Yes.
kind of like that actually. I
I
think
did too.
that is good. Tristan's been a sort of a below average post defender in the past.
Yeah.
I thought he did a pretty good job today.
You and I have talked about this a little bit, but I don't think we've discussed it on the cast, and that is that when Tristan was drafted, Tristan was drafted with the fourth pick, and I think Valanciunas was the fifth pick, and
Yeah, there was a lot of talk.
I mean, this was not a good time in Cavs history. LeBron was gone. It was sort of the dark ages. But a really common topic of debate amongst Cavs fans during that time was whether they should have gotten Valanciunas instead of Thompson. And that debate really is still going on. I mean, it's sort of unclear who's better. Valanciunas is a little bit younger. They both signed extensions, so they stayed with their teams. Valanciunas is better offensively. I think Tristan is better defensively and rebounding. They both, have a bunch of upside. Tristan has the edge in my mind because he's healthier. But in any case, it was interesting watching that play of Valanciunas try to break down Tristan, because I remembered just the thousands of words I've written arguing with people about Tristan. So yeah, that sort of had like a it was a moment of nostalgia for me.
Yeah, I think with the Jonas, I feel like he has a better upside. Like he can potentially be better than Tristan, but right now what Tristan provides us with just his rebounding and defense or pick and roll defense and the fact that he's always healthy, unlike Jonas, who's missed a ton of games,
Right.
is much, much better and exactly what we need right now.
I agree
But I
with
do
you. I think that Tristan has yeah, he has less upside, but he has more sort of steadiness.
constant, yeah.
Yeah, the Cavs need low variance.
Because Cavs have three high upside guys, right? In
Right.
LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin. They
Right.
don't need more upside guys. They probably need more younger upside guys, but
Sure.
they can live with that. Yeah, I think if I was starting a team, I'd probably take Jonas over Tristan. But if I had these other guys, these other great offensive players, I'd stick with Tristan on
Right,
this
given
one.
the team we have, you would take Tristan over Jonas. Yeah,
So
I
I
agree.
don't know if the decision was correct to begin with because we didn't have LeBron at the time, but it ended up working out for us, I guess.
Yeah.
I've always talked about, I think process over results. It worked out doesn't mean it was the right decision, but
Right. Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I think that Jonas probably, if you were to look, it's just he has more offensive ability, and it seems like he has some
and he's a good rebounder too.
untapped.
He's pretty good, really good offensive
Yeah.
rebounder, just like Tristan is. But yeah, his injuries really scare me.
Yeah. Well, he's enormous too, right? He's 7 feet tall, 265 pounds. He's almost always the biggest guy out there, and he moves well. So, anyway, all right. Enough of the JV love fest. We have Tristan, and we're happy with him. Let's see. Anything else interesting tonight? Yeah, I mean, both Carroll and Lowry were awful. Or sorry, but well, Carroll was also awful, but he's
And
been awful the
DeRozan,
whole
either.
series. Yeah, both DeRozan and Lowry were just pitiful. I don't know. Hopefully, the Cavs can. I feel like it doesn't really matter what the Cavs do defensively, because those guys are going to get their shots, and they're either going to go in or they're not. And we
Wait,
can.
what do you mean? Well, I think a lot of it was because they were trapping today.
Yeah, but
I do think
they were trapping at the beginning of game four.
a little bit. They got away from it pretty quickly, though. I remember this game, and they
They
did not
did. They
beat
did. They
DeRozan.
did. They definitely got away from it. But
Yes,
I mean,
and whenever they
what if the
trapped it,
Cavs
to
what if
me,
the
it looked
Cavs
like
get
it.
down what if the Cavs get down seven early in game six?
I don't know. I think they need to keep up the way they play defense in tonight's game.
And
Like
trust the
maybe it doesn't work,
process.
but I think it will. I actually do think they made a good change. It wasn't just the fact that they made their shots today.
Yeah.
It's not like they made a bunch of jump shots. They were actually getting nice rolls to the basket, nice drives to the basket. They pushed it in transition. I mean, they shot, what, 57% today or something?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I have a bunch of other topics if you want to go over them about
Sure.
this game specifically.
Go
So
for it.
one thing I liked was that there was this one play where the shot clock was winding down and Larry had to make something for himself off of the dribble. And JR read that perfectly and trapped him while Kyrie was already on him. I've kind of talked about this before. I don't know if I talked about it with you or maybe with someone else, but as the shot clock is winding down, I think the one guy who's sort of on the farthest side and is not in rebounding position needs to go
And double.
and double, exactly. Because at that point, if the other guy passes, shot clock expires, and
Right.
if he tries to shoot, it's going to be much, much harder over the double.
Yeah, that takes a level of awareness from the defensive players.
Right. And they did do it a couple of times today, which was great to see. One time was LeBron, one time was JR, which is again, I think speaks more to the preparation that they got or more to the, you know, the punch in the mouth that they received these last
Yeah,
couple
or
of games.
maybe it was just their level of focus tonight.
Yeah, I think I they definitely seem more focused. I mean, that part I can tell you that, but
Yeah.
and then they were just fighting over screens much better, which is, you know, makes it so much easier for guys like Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson in the front
Right.
court that they don't have to cover up. Like I've talked about with you before, Kevin Love is a good defender when he can play within the system, but when he has to clean up mistakes for
Right.
Irving and Tristan, he's not going to be able to do it. I'm
Right.
sorry.
Yeah, he is not a good last line of defense defender.
Right.
Like
But if.
Hassan Whiteside's good at that, DeAndre Jordan's good at that, Serge Ibaka is good at that. If somebody on the perimeter gets blown by, they can sort of step up and at least contest the shot. That's not Kevin Love's game.
Right. He can play within the system as long as everyone else is doing their job well. I think that's
Yeah.
where sort of his above average defense in the regular season comes from.
I forgot to mention on Love. So he was 8 of 10 tonight. One of those misses was pretty embarrassing. Do you
It was
remember?
a dunk. Yeah, I remember that.
It was a perfect pass from LeBron. I think it was LeBron. It may have been Irving, but I think it was
Hey, we would
LeBron.
have had a 40-point lead if he had made that.
I know. Ugh, the shots that weren't. Yeah, he was right under the hoop and he went up for a two-handed dunk and
He's got a dunk. He tried to lay it
it
up again.
wasn't really close. No, I think he tried to two-handed dunk it again.
I've seen him dunk before. I don't know what's up these
No, I mean
days.
obviously he can dunk. I mean, well, okay, I say obviously. He can dunk. I've seen footage.
We saw
That's
reverse
right. He
transition
had
dunk from him in the Celtics series last season. Do you remember
Right.
that?
Yeah. It's just yeah, he just seems he was sort of groundbound on that dunk attempt. It was embarrassing. Yeah, he could have been 9 of 10 and he would have had I think that would have put him over 100% true
It would
shooting
have put him for
percentage.
100, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. But anyway, I guess we'll allow it. That 8 of 10 is still pretty good.
The only thing I didn't like about tonight was the Cavs bit on too many pump fakes. If Golden State somehow gets to the finals, they're gonna make you pay for that. Maybe I from what I've seen, OKC doesn't do it as much, but Golden State really makes you buy, and the San Antonio especially used to do this. They pump fake so much, and then if you bite on those things, you're gonna just keep
Yeah,
putting
you're
them at the foul
finished.
line. Yeah. These guys
Yeah,
do.
I don't think Golden State's going to make the finals, although we can get into
We can
that
talk
when
about
we're
this at
done.
the end of this podcast,
Yeah.
but yeah, I do think it's an interesting discussion, especially with what's happened in that series.
Yeah, crazy.
I also like the fact that Tyronn Lue was sort of he did not take his foot off the pedal, and even when the Cavs were up by like 30 or up by 17, he kept calling those timeouts at the end of quarters just to get that extra possession,
I like that too.
just to get LeBron back in to, you know, to increase your expected value on those end of quarter possessions. I
Yeah,
think
I
he needs
love
to.
that.
He did that a lot in like the first two rounds, but he kind of just went away from it in this early on in the series. I think Cavs really
Well,
just complacent all around.
in games 3 and 4, he had used his timeouts to stop runs. It's a little bit
Yeah.
hard to use your
You're right. You're
timeouts to like maximize a possession when you have to hold them to stop the other team from going on
right. You're
runs.
right. I think you're right there.
But
But it's good to see. Yeah.
yeah. He did have a sort of wasted time. I've mentioned this to you and you told me that I was being too picky, but he called a timeout with less than 6 minutes with like 5:50 left in the third. And you get there's a TV timeout with less than 6 minutes in the third, so he could have just waited for the next stoppage and play and they would have gotten a timeout. But I am definitely into the territory of being r insanely picky for no good reason with
Yeah,
that
I don't think
complaint.
there's much to pick on. I think these are the only two things, like maybe that one timeout that he called extra, or the fact that they kept biting on pump fakes.
Yeah, I mean, we sound like Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson at the end of the game, like just trying to come up with something to complain about.
They were talking about TV shows or something, right?
Yeah, they were talking about Hawaii 5-0, and then they were talking about the Barkley, what's his name, the TNT, Ernie
Ernie
Johnson,
Johnson. That was actually kind of fun
three-point
to watch. Ernie
contest.
has a pretty nice stroke from three. I was very
Yeah,
surprised, yeah.
I'm shocked. But yeah, Ernie Johnson beat Charles Barkley in a three-point shooting contest. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to find something to complain about the Cavs tonight. I mean, they just looked so dominant. And Okay, well, what do you think the odds that they win game six are?
Above 50%, I'd say. But not too much, but I'd maybe like put it at 55 to 60%.
Okay.
And this is sort of it's a closeout game, which Cavs have been pretty good in, and LeBron especially, he is always fired up for. I think they will come out, and I do think they made some really good adjustments in this game, which they'll stick to in the next game
Right. And
instead of, you know, sorry.
let's re remember, like, game four was a very close game. I mean, the Cavs lost by, I think, seven or something, but
Yeah, it was
the game
even
was
the
closer
one
than that
before
final
that. It wasn't
score.
a blowout. I know it looked like it in the end because it was 15, but the Cavs cut it down to like five or four at one
Right.
point, I remember.
Right. And remember, in both those games, the Cavs clawed back from huge deficits, right? So if they can just avoid getting down by, double digits early, I think that they're,
It should be okay. Yeah.
yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, I think
I mean, I don't think there's
60% sounds about
anyone,
right.
one objective person who thinks the Cavs are the worst team in this matchup, right? Like, everyone knows that Cavs are the better team.
Right. It's just Toronto's sort of incredible play at home. It sort of has everyone sort of,
Yeah,
well, at least
just a
has me
combi-
confused.
right. I thought it was a combination of them playing incredibly well and us playing incredibly
Yeah.
poorly.
Hopefully you're right. Hopefully it was the Cavs can fix things that they can control, and it's not just that Toronto becomes sort of otherworldly at home.
Yeah, like after these last two games, we obviously saw a lot of overreactions. I thought of one thing that was kind of missed by a lot of people was Tyronn Lue. I think he got a bit of a pass there. I do think he overreacted way too much to little things that happened within the game and changed up his entire game plan, specifically his rotations, some of the sets he was running that kept working for like 10 straight possessions. And someone else talked about this actually. I think Ben Dowsett from a Utah Jazz. He kind of documented that set, that the horns rub that they've been running continuously, and the one that got them 10 straight points or 10 straight possessions in the fourth quarter of last game.
Yeah.
But as soon as Lowry kind of disturbed it in one possession, they just
They went
stopped
away.
going. They went away
Yeah.
from it, yeah. And they ran it again today with that second year, and it worked perfectly.
They did. They showed, I think it was at halftime, or it might have been coming out of one of the timeouts, they ran a segment where they showed that play twice, and it's a
It makes
really
sense because.
successful play for the Cavs, 'cause it either gets LeBron a dunk, or it gets usually
Try.
the two they showed Channing Frye wide open corner three.
Yeah, it's a simple play where, pick and roll, Dele, LeBron's
Yep.
rolling to the basket, Dele's a great passer, and then Frye flares out to the 3-point line and goes a little
Right.
farther to the corner.
Right.
So the guy that's covering Frye has to decide, A, either if he wants to cover the role man, which is LeBron, or cover Frye, who's, like a ridiculously good 3-point shooter and a ridiculously fast release.
Right.
And
Yeah,
that's a
it's a pick your
bad
poison
choice
at that
between those
point.
two. I
Right.
think if I were defending it, I would basically just leave Dele alone and double up LeBron and leave the guy
Yeah,
on. I don't
I
know why
think
they play so tough on Dele sometimes. He's not
Well,
gonna shoot. He's not gonna shoot off the dribble. He's been making his floater lately, but that's still like the lowest expected value in my mind.
Right. I think the Cavs I think if the Cavs ran that play too much, we would start to see it being covered better. But they're not running it enough yet for defenses to actually respond to it properly. So they should at least run it until that happens.
And they made some variations today too. So I think some people were talking about it on Twitter. I'm not going to talk about it on this podcast, but you can go check out Ben Dowsett's page. Yeah, they just made some few adjustments to that place and the way they were flaring out and the other guys, the other off-ball movement that was happening. So some other diversions to confuse the defense a little bit. And that's what most of these offensive sets are, right? Like you have very simple plays at the core of it, and then you have other guys setting diversions just to confuse the defense a little bit.
Right. Yeah, to sort of camouflage it.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We'll go ahead.
What did you think of Curry and LeBron both, I thought, did a really good job of playing the passing lanes today. Just in general, reading where they were going to make a pass before it and then cutting it off with a steal
Yeah.
or at
JR
least
as well.
convincing them.
I
Yeah,
thought
Jared.
JR did a good job. Yeah, JR and Kyrie had four and three steals respectively. LeBron had two. Yeah, they were. Yeah, I mean, it was tough to watch from Toronto's perspective. They just couldn't. they couldn't hold on to the ball. When they could, they weren't getting open looks, and when they got open looks, they were missing. It was just, yeah, it was failure on all three levels there.
Yeah, and even Kevin Love, as I mentioned before, made him pay on the trap, so he wouldn't just do a normal trap. As soon as he trapped the guard, he would try to get the ball out of his hand just by being very aggressive on ball. So,
yeah,
that's why they got 18 turnovers. It wasn't just by accident, you know.
Right. Yeah.
What do you think of Jeff Van Gundy's point about LeBron on the 76ers? Do you think he would make the finals?
It was Mark Jackson's point, right?
You're right, Mark. I think they were arguing about it, but yeah.
Yeah, Mark Jackson said that if LeBron was on the 76ers, they would make the finals, right? Did he say conference finals or finals?
He said finals.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I think that's less talking about LeBron, and I think it speaks more to how bad that roster is in general.
Yeah.
I think LeBron could probably make the finals on like maybe every team, but maybe like three or four, in my opinion, in the East.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, LeBron James is, once again, the best player in the NBA by RPM. I don't think we'd mentioned that yet. Yeah, so on the latest update to Jeremiah Sengelman's Real Plus Minus on ESPN.com, LeBron James is the number one player in the NBA by RPM. Draymond Green has fallen off.
Yeah, I'm just saying that thanks to the Golden State Warriors getting blown out by OKC a couple of times.
Right. Yeah, I mean, LeBron has also been like a firestorm of efficiency in the playoffs, so his RPM has also gone up. LeBron's RPM
absolutely.
Is almost
I agree.
9 now, so it's been a combination of both. But yeah,
no, he's great.
So,
even
so anyway, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to mention that, yeah, he is now once again sort of, at least by my favorite stat, the best player in the league. I think he contributes value above and beyond RPM. So RPM effectively measures how much better the team is when you're on the court than when you're off the court. But what if you improve the team when you're off the court? That actually hurts your RPM.
Like in the locker room or something.
Right,
or even
right.
Just, exactly,
right.
Yeah.
That actually hurts your RPM. And I think LeBron does that. And I think RPM does a bad job of well, I don't think. It does do a bad job of quantifying that kind of contribution. So I think when you combine all those things, like LeBron is even more of the best player in the league. And to be honest, that's something I'm very surprised by. When through the first half of last season, it was looking like...
It was very different.
Yeah, it was looking like the twilight years were coming earlier than I had hoped. But in any case, LeBron is the best player. I think you're probably right. There's three or four or five teams in the East that he couldn't drag to the NBA Finals. But I mean, if you once you get to like eliminating five, then you've already got like playoff teams in the East. So, I think if you added LeBron,
I meant the NBA Finals, not just the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. But I think if you added LeBron to, for example, the Pistons, they'd probably make the finals.
Easily. The Pistons team was good. They've given us the most. In my opinion, they've given us the most competition so far.
The
I know
most legitimate competition, yeah. I
know like the Raptors did beat us, but I think a lot of it was just us beating ourselves.
Yeah,
and if we just look at the net rating, we actually have a much better net rating in this series than we did in that Piston series.
Right. I agree. I think part of that is because the Cavs didn't really find their groove until sort of the end of that series and going into the Atlanta series. So who knows if we played the Pistons now, it might go very differently. But
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. In any case. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the West, but did you have anything else you wanted to talk about tonight's game first?
Yeah, just a couple of things.
Sure.
Richard Jefferson, man. He's 35 years old, and just seems like a burst of energy whenever he comes off the bench to me. He almost always has a dunk. I think, have you heard that podcast, the Jalen and Jacoby podcast?
I have, but I haven't listened to it lately. Yeah.
David Jacoby always talks about every Cavs game he's watched, he's always seen a Richard Jefferson dunk this year.
Well, he had one tonight.
And he had one tonight. He always seems to get one. I think that speaks to, you know, all the work that he puts in off the court that we don't necessarily get to see. Like, it's really hard to keep your body in shape at the age of 35 to keep up with these, you know, young athletic guys.
Yeah, I mean, I myself am 35 years old, and
it's a little different.
Well, I mean, only by choice. I mean, if I wanted to, I obviously could be. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a big runner, and I always have, like, various running injuries. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty astounding to me how Jefferson... I mean, he has better hops than Kevin Love, who's, several inches taller
Tall.
and 8 years younger. So yeah, I mean,
He's 27. I always forget how young Love is, actually.
Love still has some upside,
Yeah.
especially
Hopefully
when
the
you
bag doesn't
consider,
bother him too much.
but I mean, especially when you consider that, the last offseason he didn't really get to work on his game at all.
Yeah, people forget this for some reason that Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving did not have any sort of workout in the offseason, so it was really hard for them to improve
Right.
without having
I
while
forget that
rehabbing.
sometimes. I don't know if I forget it, but I don't appreciate it enough.
Yeah, like especially Kyrie, obviously. I mean, Kyrie was kind of obvious to tell when you watched him in the regular season. Kevin Love was kind of on and off sometimes. It was harder to tell, but I do think the off season of rehab affected him a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, these overreactions in general, kind of after these two games when he's off, just kind of piss me off in general. He has like a couple of
Yeah,
bad games and everyone's just ready to trade him again.
it was brutal. We talked about after we recorded the last episode that I was gonna try to avoid Reddit and, Twitter for a couple of days, and I did, and it was much nicer than I think your experience was.
I try to avoid it, but then like I
I
somehow
know you can't
end up.
help yourself. You gotta stick your hand in that cookie jar of pain.
Some guy was talking about on Reddit, I think it was on Reddit NBA, and the question specifically was, is Kevin Love the worst $100+ million player to play in
Oh.
the conference finals? I'm like, are you kidding me?
Thank God. My general sort of reaction when anybody says that is I will say, well, Kevin Love's number 10 in the NBA in RPM, so why do you think that is? And if they say something like, well, I don't know what RPM is, it's like, oh, okay, well, then we can just end this conversation now. but yeah, like you need to somehow explain why RPM thinks he's the 10th best player in the NBA. And if you can't, I can come up with some reasons. I can actually,
I think there are legitimate reasons why it might be, but
I think
you're
there
going to
are
have a
too,
very
but
hard
that's
time
never what people
convincing.
say. But yeah, that's,
Exactly.
you'd have a hard time convincing me he's not in the top 20.
Exactly.
And what people are saying, yeah, I mean, the comment that he's like the worst or, yeah, the worst $100 million player in NBA history, I mean, that's just preposterous.
He had two bad games, man. And they were bad. Like 5 of 23 is horrible. Don't
They
get me
were
wrong.
bad. And Kevin Love's variability and sort of occasional mopiness annoy me. I find them irritating, and I think that I probably underrate him because of those things. But yeah, RPM doesn't lie.
Yeah, and it's also like it's good to remember that this is his first playoffs, real playoffs, right? Especially deep in the playoffs. I mean, last season he got injured so quickly, so I don't count that. But again, this is his first playoff experience. Like, it's hard to play on the road in the playoffs, especially in a place like Toronto, where the crowd is just really, really loud and into your face.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, it's a lot easier to say after tonight when he had the best offensive game maybe in playoff history for the Cavs. We'll have to look that up, but I think
Yeah.
maybe in terms of true shooting percentage. But
I mean, I was saying this before this game too, and you know this. Like, I'm not being dishonest here.
no. Yeah, no, you were
I don't
upset
try. I don't.
about
I try not to overreact in general. I
Yeah, you
sometimes
were
do it with
upset about
Kyrie a
the
little bit,
treatment Love
but
was getting.
yeah.
Yeah, well, both you and I have a weird. I don't think it's weird. We have like a reasonable anti-Kyrie bias based on what we saw during the regular season. But he's been better in the he's better. He's been outstanding in the playoffs. So,
Yeah, no, he has. I'm glad that he's sort of back to his, 2014, 2015 form.
yeah, me too. Okay, anything else on tonight's game?
No, not really. I think I thought it was kind of funny when Jeff Van Gundy mentioned that about that groin injury. He said, quote unquote, it's legal now.
Oh yeah, so, yeah.
I think
Somebody
somewhere
on the
in here.
Raptors got
It was
a groin impacted in the groin.
Lon Wright, I think. Yeah.
And who's Darrell Wright's younger brother? And Jeff Van Gundy quipped, "Oh well, that's legal now, so just play on." It's just sort of funny, but yeah, that segues well into talking about what's going on in the OKC Golden State Warriors series. But oh wait, first, okay, so you think 55-60% is the Cavs' chance of winning Game 6?
Yeah, and if it somehow gets to,
Game
sorry, if
7.
it somehow gets to game 7, so I've always said this, and I know you've heard me say this before, but game 7s at home are usually about 80%, and I kind of buy that. I don't think it's more or less than that. So I do think if it gets to a game seven, Cavs are going to be like 80, 85-ish. So for at this point, if I do the math correctly, the Toronto's chances are basically about 6% to win the series.
That's right.
It's pretty low.
Yeah.
Winning a game seven on the road is really tough, especially when you're playing the Cavs, you're plus 20 at home.
Right. Yeah, I think this is looking very good for the Cavs. I hope that this goes
We finish
six.
It in six, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it would just, that would be a big boost for the Cavs. They could use the rest.
We still get 6 days off before the final.
I know.
Yeah, no, that's with six, I mean. But yeah, it would be four if they made it, if they went to seven.
Right. So let's talk about the West a little bit. So the Oklahoma City Thunder are up 3-1 against the Golden State Warriors, the best team in history, Golden State Warriors.
Regular season team, but yeah.
Right. Well, we don't know what's going to happen to them in the postseason yet.
That's true.
They play game five tomorrow in here. Well, I live in Sacramento. Yeah, I live in San Francisco.
That's right.
So yeah, they'll be playing here tomorrow. And gosh, I mean, the Warriors have looked just listless the last two games.
I am very surprised. I mean, I think we talked about this in the podcast before. I was deciding between Golden State in five or Golden State in seven. Seven's still possible, technically.
Yeah.
It's not probable at all anymore. But yeah, I am very surprised at what happened in that series. I think some of it's Golden State's fault, especially, you know, the way Steph's looked, the way Draymond's looked. But I think most of the credit has to go to OKC and just the way they've pummeled them every single quarter in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, we talked about this a little bit today. All you can do is have a good process. And if you have a good process, let's say that leads to, you know, a 1.05 points per possession offensively, and, you know, defensively you allow 0.98 points per possession. And that's what, like, your process that you honed throughout the regular season and the early playoff rounds has given you. That's all well and fine, and, you know, obviously on this podcast we're huge advocates for understanding the numbers and maximizing the process, but in the end it comes down to
who makes their open shots.
Yeah, who makes their shots. And you shared with me some, like, just incredible statistics tonight. So, or earlier today. So the first one is Andre Robertson and Dion Waiters, who are two just mediocre to bad three-point shooters.
Or just players in general. Well, okay.
Yeah,
Robertson's
but, like,
good on defense.
We're just going to talk about their shooting for now.
Okay.
They are shooting 12 of 24 in this series from three. That's 50% from, like, two guys who... And that's volume, too, right? That's not, like, a low number of threes through four games. And what was it? It's Draymond and Clay are shoot... What? I can't remember what it was.
It was, like, 13 of 47 or something like that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, they just... I mean, what are the Warriors supposed to do? I mean, they want Draymond and Klay shooting open threes. They've gotten, presumably, 47-ish of them, and they've only made 13 compared to Robertson and Waiters making 12 out of 24. At some point, it's just bad luck.
I know they're playing better defense, but they've seen a lot of these defenses all season long.
Right.
And sometimes, yeah,
and
you just don't
defense,
make your shots, man.
Like, let's say the Warriors were averaging 1.1 points per possession. Yeah, maybe great defense can take them down to like 1.0 or like 1.03 or something, but come on, not like this. This is just crazy.
I think what you said
was
understand. Perfect. At some point, it's just a random number generator, but it's just weighted. And all you can do is control the weights, but you can't control what it spits out in terms of shooting specifically.
Right. Yeah, that is what I said. You want to have your dice weighted more in your favor, but you still have to roll the dice. And, yeah, sometimes you're getting unlucky. You shared another interesting stat with me, which is before tonight's game, Kevin Durant and LeBron James were both shooting 29% from three in these playoffs. I thought that was sort of interesting. I mean, Durant still massively spreads the floor whenever he's outside the three-point line.
He's guarded,
There's somebody stuck to him. And LeBron no longer gets that luxury.
So one thing I've noticed that he gets that luxury when he's trying to post someone up as opposed to just
LeBron
going face
KD?
LeBron.
Okay.
So if he's trying to post someone up, they're much more likely to guard him at the perimeter as opposed to if he's just sort of facing up. I think the problem is if he So the issue is that if they don't guard him that far out and he posts them up, he can just sort of take them in very quickly. But if they guard him really far outside, he's going to have a hard time backing his guy down that far in. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. You just don't want to give LeBron a running start.
Yeah, once LeBron gets going downhill, he's a little tough to stop. You know what? This is sort of off topic, but on topic of the Cavs, have you noticed how good LeBron is getting at toeing the baseline?
Baseline one. What
Like,
do you
so
mean? Yeah.
he'll start driving from a corner, and normally people start running into trouble if they go toward the baseline side, they'll often
Oh,
step out of
yeah. I thought
bounds
you
or end up
stepped
in a
out at one
position.
of the possessions.
I
I don't
thought he
know.
did too, but they showed a replay and he just barely stayed in bounds. Or maybe I actually rewound it on my DVR to check. He stayed in bounds on that, but I feel like he's getting really good at like dancing around down there, and maybe he's just been lucky and a 2 or 3 game sample size here, but
Yeah, I mean,
that's a new wrinkle to his game.
I'm always willing to give him sort of the benefit of the doubt, because
Right.
as I've told you before, I think he's easily going to be the one of the top three greatest players ever in NBA history. He could go down as the greatest ever, depending on, I don't know what the stats look like for Michael
Yeah,
Jordan
we'll have to do a
specifically.
podcast in the off season on that topic.
But I think
And
no one's going to disagree with me when I say top three at least, right? Would you agree with that?
well, I mean, I think he's probably going to be number one, so I'm not going to disagree. I disagree that no one would argue with you that he's top
Oh
three. I
yeah,
think
someone's gonna argue with him, but
there are a bunch of idiots out there.
like smart people, I think at least agree top
Right.
five and top three, I think is pretty reasonable too.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. I agree. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what the Warriors can do here. I mean, they've looked completely out of sorts. I expect them to win tomorrow,
I do
which will
too.
make the series interesting. That means, in many ways, all the Warriors need to do is win Game Six, and then if they've won two in a row going into Game Seven, I think they would win Game Seven. But yeah, they got to win tomorrow first, and
Let me ask you this. What probability do you give them to win tomorrow? They're at home, but they have been blown out 3 games in a row, or 2 games in a row now.
Right, and
So
3 out of 4.
3 out of 4. So what probability would you say they win tomorrow? It's got to be about 50%, but where, like 70, 60, 80?
Boy, I don't know. I think that there might be something wrong with Steph.
I think there is too, yeah.
I think that Draymond Green is like normally he's like a caged animal. I mean, he's just going insane, and he like always brings all this energy, but I feel like the sheepishness that he brought to yesterday's game after sort of what happened in game three is got to be pretty concerning. I mean, he's an
That is
energy
very
guy,
concerning. Yeah.
and he's sort of handcuffed now because of the media perception. Being at home will probably help him, so maybe he'll feed off of that energy. But I mean, the thing with the Warriors is, NBA teams are highly susceptible to small changes, right? So small changes in the way they operate can have a big impact. Like we were talking about the weighted random number generator, and if as you start introducing small changes, that can cascade and cause bigger changes down the chain. And yeah, a part of me wonders if it's going to take an off season for Steph and Dre to get their mojo back. So that a part of me wonders that. The other part of me says, like, look, Steph and Dre were sort of the best two-man combo maybe in the history of the game this season. They are two outstanding players, and the law of averages says that they're due for an outstanding game here. So I just don't know. But I think if I were handicapping it, I might be ambivalent between a bet on either team. Like I think the Thunder have a good chance of winning tomorrow. I think it's 50-50.
Oh, you think it's 50-50? Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think it's the game after that in Oklahoma City? That's got to be less than 50.
For the Warriors?
Yeah, let's say
Yeah.
they win tomorrow,
Yeah.
but then what do you think the Warriors' chances are of winning
Yeah, I
in
mean,
Oklahoma?
yeah, we're sort of, I mean,
It's connected too,
I
because if
don't,
they
I
win
would like
tomorrow,
to have the
it's up there.
prior of knowing what happened in game five, but absent that, given, let's say, like assuming the Warriors win by five or something tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Thunder would have to be like 65% or something.
Okay, so that's 0.35. And I mentioned before that home court is usually 80% in the
Sure. So
game sevens.
call it 0.8 for game
So
seven
about 14% for you.
for the Warriors to win the series.
Yeah, and I had like 19%. I think they have a better chance of winning tomorrow than you do, but that's the only difference between our assumptions. So
Yeah.
yeah, anywhere between 15% and 20% are where like most of the reliable numbers are right now.
That's interesting because so Vegas obviously feels differently. So the odds in Vegas right now are 9-2 for the Warriors to win the finals. So that's 4.5-1, which means to win the finals, they are
What is OKC's? You can kind of
they're
calculate it that way.
22%, and Oklahoma City is 13-10, so a $13 bet. No, sorry, a $10 bet wins you $13. So they're like, what is that, like 80%? They're like 40% chance to win the finals. But I think what's happening there is people think if the Warriors make the finals, they're basically guaranteed to win them. But even with that, this says that they're 22% to win the finals. So Vegas obviously thinks the odds of the Warriors making it is greater than 14% or 19%.
Yeah, I think if these games had been close, I would have agreed with that.
Yeah.
I am not buying it the way these games have played out. I mean, Westbrook and Kevin Durant's defense, I think I told you this before, people have been overrating Kevin Durant's offense in these playoffs. He's actually not been very efficient at
Yeah,
all.
he's shooting 29% from three.
Yeah, and last night he was 8 of 24, but his defense has just been so good, like near the rim especially. He's been their best rim protector so far in the playoffs. Which is kind of ridiculous when you think about it, but
Well,
also
he's
when you watch
tall.
it,
He's always
since
been tall and athletic, so
yeah, that
it
helps.
doesn't make sense that he hasn't been so good before. But it does. It also doesn't
Yeah,
make
like
sense
that
that he's
kind of
been so
defense
good now.
burns you out, you know, especially if
It
you play
does, yeah.
all season long. And then
Yeah.
Serge Ibaka obviously always had the athleticism, and he's finally showing signs of life now, so that's good. Adams, do you realize Steven Adams is only 22 years old?
Yeah, I saw that. What a find.
That is a great find. And that was part of that James Harden trade that everyone was,
I know.
I guess, denigrating. But
I know.
I will
Yeah.
definitely take that as a consolation prize.
Yeah.
Obviously, James is much better, but I will take that as a consolation prize.
Yeah. I mean, it's surprising how it's just weird how those things work out over time.
How good they are at drafting. I mean,
Right?
they drafted Kevin, they drafted Russell, they drafted Serge Ibaka, they've drafted James Harden, they drafted Steven Adams.
I feel bad for Seattle basketball fans. Like, this has to
Yeah.
be tough to watch. It's so unfair. I mean,
Yeah, I
their
agree.
owner just robbed their city of their team, and it's. Yeah, the fans did nothing wrong. Like, they were outstanding fans, and this is like, I mean, this is like the ultimate slap in the face. Like, not only does your team get stolen away, but they get, sort of two of the best young talents of
Maybe
this
we've ever
generation.
seen.
And yeah, I mean, it's just such a bummer. So anyway, yeah, I love Oklahoma City. They're fun to watch. Like, I like that they're beating the Warriors, but like this thing just always, I almost feel guilty rooting for them because it's so unfair to
The
people from
Sonics, yeah.
Seattle. But anyway, I will not be rooting for them in the finals. So Seattle fans who I'm sure really care what I
Well,
think, you can
unless
solace in
Toronto
that.
makes it, then I'll be rooting for
Well,
them.
yeah,
But
right. But that's not going to happen, right, Arnav?
speaking of trades, how about that Channing Frye for Anderson Varejao trade?
Yeah, I saw a couple tweets mentioning that today.
What do you think of it? I know we gave up a first rounder for it, but just watching him in the playoffs and just in general, his demeanor, how well he fits in with the team, how great he is on that second squad, and just a great shooter, and obviously how bad Henderson's been for the Warriors. What do you still think of that trade? Do you still think it was above a
Yeah.
B?
Well, okay. I mean, look, the reason why, okay, for starters, obviously I was for this trade at the time. I'm even more for it now. The reason why that trade was sad to me was that it was like trading away a piece of my heart, right? Like, Anderson Varejao was the longest tenured Cleveland professional athlete. Everyone had like lots of like nice memories about him, and the thing with trading him was it was just sort of it was sort of heartbreaking. It's like, oh, this is like the end of an era. And I still feel that way. Like, I'm glad we made the trade, but like, I'm still like sort of bummed that we had to make that trade.
I feel like
So
I'm the only.
that's my view on it.
Yeah. I
But
feel like I'm the only Cavs fan who's not attached to Varejao or Mo Williams for some reason.
I'm not attached to Mo. Well, you know what? There is one thing I like about Mo Williams. When LeBron left, Mo Williams was pissed.
Yeah, he
And
tweeted all those things out, right?
I
Things like
really
that.
liked that about Mo. Like I liked that Dan Gilbert like wrote that open letter. I liked that Mo, because I was feeling, yeah, it was like a breakup. Like I was so upset.
Yeah, I think it was
It
just
was
a feeling of.
nice to see like other people express their upsetness.
Right. Like, looking back at it, obviously it was kind of childish, but I do think I can imagine, how a lot of the Cavs fans who specifically lived in Cleveland felt when LeBron had left, and how it was good to relate to someone, especially the owner.
Yeah, it was cathartic a little bit. But anyway, yeah, obviously everyone regrets the way they reacted then. So.
And it's also kind of a double positive. I tweeted this out today that Varejao isn't ha obviously hasn't been playing well for the Warriors, and
Yeah.
somehow Steve Kerr still keeps playing him. So obviously, I don't think that's the reason why they've been losing, but
Right.
it's even if it's like 2% of it, he's helped us out there.
Right. Well, I have a theory, and I think you can guess what it is because I think I've hinted at it to you, but don't reveal it. I have a theory for why the Warriors are suddenly doing badly, but I am not going to reveal it until and if they actually lose.
Oh, you do?
Or
Okay.
yeah.
Actually,
I'm like LeBron during last year's finals, like, "Oh, I have my own secret motivation.
okay.
I have my own secret reason why I think the Warriors are losing, but
Hopefully this is not it, because I'm going to ask you a question here, but
Okay.
do you think Steph is injured, or at least less than 100%? Because I know there was that Wojnarowski article.
Yeah. I did not read the Wojnarowski article,
He said he was
but
like, he according to a source, quote unquote, close to Steph, he's 70%. And we know how much leeway he has with his sources when it comes to these opinion pieces, but
yeah, I mean, the problem is he has such good sources that he can sort of lie and people will believe him. That's what
yeah,
he's
you have to
fun.
distinguish his tweets from his opinion pieces.
Right.
Opinion
Yeah,
pieces are
so.
BS. His tweets, when he's announcing news, are always almost perfect.
Did you see? So Steve Kerr today in his presser said that he thought that he said Curry is not injured. If he were injured, he wouldn't be playing. And then he said something weird. I don't remember the
I
exact
mean,
quote,
he's
but it was something
supposed to say
like,
that, to be
yeah,
fair.
but he said something like he's not quite himself right now, or he's not quite something, 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 but he's not injured. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you can read the tea leaves there. I don't know what that means. But that's just another data point. I don't know. I mean, he seems sort of tentative and less aggressive, but I mean, when you're getting blown out and you're getting defended so well, that's sort of the way people behave. So I don't know. I don't know. What do you
My
think?
take on it is that he is less than 100%, but I don't think it would have mattered, especially if the way Draymond has played. I
Right.
think their bigger problem is Draymond and not the way Steph has looked, to be honest with you.
Huh.
That's my take on it. I
I mean,
still
that's
think if
obviously right. I mean, the gap between Draymond's normal and Draymond this series and Steph's normal and Steph this series is way bigger for Draymond. So,
Right. And Draymond was still like a top 10 player in the league, or maybe even top 5 if you look at RPM.
yeah, or really maybe even top one when that series started.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, Draymond is an outstanding player, and I think to some extent he didn't get enough credit for their success this year, and he's probably not getting enough discredit for their failures now.
He's a minus 73 after setting the season record for plus minus in the regular
Gosh.
season. In two games, he's a minus 73.
Awful.
Which is funny because that's also the number of wins they had this season. But
Right. Well, we've been recording for an hour here. I
yeah.
wanted to mention one other thing. So, several people have emailed us asking us to comment on who we would rather face in the finals. I've been a little bit loath to address that. I'm not a superstitious person, but I know some of our listeners are, and so I don't want to like attract their ire. So that's why we haven't much talked about that. I think it's pretty clear who we would rather face, but we will definitely address that once the winner of the West
I mean, I'll say it
is
now.
decided.
Oklahoma
Yeah,
City by a large mile.
yeah, me too. I just think, well, I think a bunch of stuff. But yeah, this is, I think, might be our longest podcast ever, so we should wrap it up. You have anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I think if and when we get to the finals, we'll talk about the matchup issues and how different the Cavs would match up with the OKC than the Warriors did, and how that can sort of be in our favor a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, we'll do that when we if and when we get there.
Yeah. Hopefully when. All right, so this has been episode 29. Are we on episode 29? Okay, this has been episode 29 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. Just want to mention one thing about our next show. We will be trying to do it after game six, like we have for most of the games in the playoffs here. I will be out of town. I have booked a room at a place that says they're a business hotel and claim they have good internet. I called them today and asked them if my room is near the router and all that. So hopefully we'll have that sorted out, but there's a small chance that we'll have technical issues and not be able to podcast, but hopefully that doesn't happen. And you will be hearing us on Friday after the game. Go Cavs.